We always bring our own conditioning to a situation. If we've been made to feel inferior as a child, we're very likely to carry that into our later years when we're in contact with other people. Like I notice for myself, if somebody gives me their opinion in a strong way, my conditioning is such that I won't stand up for what I want or what I think the way I would like it to be. But other people do. And so sometimes I feel resentment. But then in the very next moment when I am aware of that, I know it as self. Conceit is not just feeling superior, but it's feeling inferior. Anything that identifies us with some kind of solid entity that we think is what we are, we're in for trouble. We have to be careful as monastics not to get on our high horse just because we're wearing a robe. It's okay to have an opinion with someone in a monastery who's been ordained for a number of years. But you have life experience. It's okay to share that even if they don't listen. Here we try not to climb on any high horse with anyone. I just see the danger of it. I used to see it with especially young monks. As soon as they had 10 vasas and they would become an ajahn, it means teacher. And then I noticed the way I was treated. You just watch what goes through the mind and let it go. And observe the rising up of the ego in the face of that. And then once that happens, there's nothing to fight with. There's no more fight. There's just light, bright light in the heart. You just see the danger. So when you see that, you realize how damaging it can be to have any power, whether you're a government representative in some way, or you're a Buddha representative in some way, or you're a representative of anything. Right away, there's an ego that climbs up on top of that and sits down on a little throne and becomes something big. It's just a danger. But the danger that I'm finding when there's power, the danger is that you start to want to please people. So to quote Anthony de Mello, the cost of veneration is conformity. As soon as there's an ego that can climb up on something and take a big seat, you have to start bowing to what people want so you can please them, so you can keep receiving the veneration. There is a very big price that we pay with this ego. And it's a silent, it's like a Virginia creeper. It just crawls up on your heart and squeezes it tight. So it's really important for us to be very careful how we use whatever authority we might be given, just because we're in a monastery or we're wearing some kind of uniform. Just to be more mindful of how that egoic identity creeps in and takes over our mindfulness of how we speak to people, how we speak to each other. how we use authority or the power of the voice or the power of knowledge we might have, information we might have. Even in the kitchen, I wouldn't say even. When I was in Taiwan, senior monastics run the kitchen and juniors were not allowed. The kitchen is considered the most difficult place to work. That's where a lot of authority and strength of personality can take over. And so it's easy for people to become dominating forces. Then you have control over the food, which everyone is interested in. And so there's a certain skill. And the seniors guard the kitchen because they're supposedly much more developed in the practice, much more skillful, and they're not going to be carried away by this power over the food or over what is selected, what is offered for the community to eat. But sometimes the older ones still have those tendencies. That was a very interesting turnaround for me, because in the Western monasteries I've been in, it was always the junior monastics or junior members of the community that did all the work in the kitchen. But basically there is no hierarchy here in terms of the work. I've taken great care to follow Baba's advice, my first teacher's advice, which was to serve, to be a servant, to do every work. There is no work that is too low, low, in quotes, for us to do. The low work is when we're not mindful when we work. That's what's low. That's what deprives us of our humanity, destroys our awareness, our ability to bring the best we have to each person, to each moment. Ajahn Chah said you can measure the quality of a monastery by how clean the toilets are. But also Baba was so humble. He really had nothing. But he had everything. I love this story. I've told it again and again. One time, a group of us devotees, and I was the only white person there, Westerner. We were all sitting on the floor. Baba sat on the floor. He had a little tiny mat, this thin mat under him. And he had the duni, which is the fire. It's considered a symbol of truth. Have the fire always lit. It was never to go out. It was a symbol for having the Dhamma always lit up in your heart. You must never let it go out. We were sitting around the fire, and people would sit there just to be in his presence. That was it. They just come in, shy, and sit in the corner around the fire. But he was always really close to us, but it was a tiny room. He'd squeeze in there. Whenever you came in, there'd always be a little group squeezed in together. Then suddenly the door burst open and this big guy comes in with a rifle. I thought, a rifle? How could you bring a weapon into Baba's presence? Because he was such a, to me, a holy being, a being of peace. He put his rifle against the wall and he fell to his knees. Very big, tall guy, fell to his knees and bowed, and Baba slapped him on the back affectionately. And then he told him to sit down, like he motioned, sit down. There was no room. And in my mind, the thought was, I hope he doesn't sit next to me. Because I didn't like, I didn't like, he was a fighter or somebody with a gun, a soldier. And I had this opinion. But wouldn't you know it, he sat right next to me and he kind of pushed me over with his knee. So I squeezed myself even tighter. We all squeezed in even more. And then there was a lot of jostling. And then finally we all settled down and it was silent. Not a word. Absolute silence. And Baba says one thing. I love everyone the same. I love everyone the same. That's what he said. And my heart fell down into my tummy. I felt so ashamed that I didn't even know this man. And of course, Baba knew what I was feeling. I felt so ashamed that I was bearing ill will to someone who respected my teacher. Because in that respect for the teacher is respect for the teaching. So here I am sitting in front of the teacher, not upholding what he most upheld himself. So I felt so much shame. Many years later, when Baba was dead, he'd passed away, and a group of us were sitting in that same place, all squeezed in together, and on Baba's seat was a photograph of him. Little. But we were all looking at the photo lovingly. And then one of his other close disciples, who I knew really well, he told the story of how he remembered sitting there when Baba was there and this big guy came in with the rifle and sat down, and how he wished that that big guy wouldn't sit and squeeze him over. And then he was on the other side, and he got squeezed over, and how ashamed he felt when Baba said, I love everyone the same. And then I told him, I was there too. We laughed so hard. We laughed at ourselves. We rejoiced that we had that same memory and the same teaching, and how much we were sitting with the memory of our teacher and still remembering the teaching many years later when I came to visit. We felt the camaraderie in the Dhamma of what we shared in our hearts and what we tried to carry in our life. And then when I was there, I was a nun. So here we come together and sit together, trying to uphold what we love so deeply in our hearts. And the Buddha isn't sitting here, but he is. We have his photograph. It's a statue. We don't know what the Buddha really looked like. But when we're with the Dhamma, we're with the Buddha. It's like he's sitting here with us. And can we look at how we treat each other, how we treat people who come. So we can't be perfect, but we have to be so mindful of what we venerate, what we really honor, and to be careful when other people are venerating our, in quote marks, authority. We have no authority. Authority is just something that the world looks at and respects. And the world is just full of delusion. So authority easily can become a springboard for abuse. Even spiritual abuse, maybe that's the worst kind. When we spread ill will to each other through our thoughts, because the thoughts lead to speech, and speech can be like venom. You know what the snake has is venom. We bite. We can bite with the tongue. What we say, what we think is what we will say at some point. In the monastery, we live so close to each other. We do have to be more and more mindful of what we're saying, how quick we are to have opinions about this, that, and the other, how easily we can dominate each other just because we are more powerful somehow in our way of being. Or we can give away our mindfulness by believing what we're not. Well, that believing what we're not is believing that we're something which we're not, because the ego is not what we are. So the whole thing is just a convoluted mess when we do that. But the simplicity of humility is not to give in to that ego again and again, not to throw away our pure present awareness of what we are, which is founded in a love and a gratitude and a connection to each other based in loving kindness and humility. To be mindful of our strong opinions, either way, I'm good or I'm no good. You're good or you're no good. How we judge each other. She's like this, I'm like this. He's like that, I'm like this. Our opinions about monks or nuns or politicians or squirrels. How can you get angry at a squirrel? I got angry at the squirrel. Leave the chipmunks alone. I don't like it when the squirrels eat the chipmunks or attack them. But they're just creatures. This is how it is. It's very difficult to practice not bearing hatred. So what we do here is cultivate the conditions in the heart to let that go. And if we can be aware more and more of how much our opinions rule how we act and speak, then we will be available not to follow those opinions, not to cater to others to gain their respect, because then we have to pay a price. We can fall down from that pedestal. We don't even realize how quickly we climb up on it, but it'll just fall down one day. The body will break, the voice will crack. Maybe no one will even pay attention to us. Who cares? We can be here quietly as long as people still want us to be here and bring the food. So they come and they go. It's okay. We're not famous. We don't have a big presence in the world. It doesn't matter. We have the pure present moment awareness with the Buddha sitting in the heart. if the Buddha has a seat within us, this is just a metaphor. It's not to make us important or to be somebody great or anything like that. It's just to be present for things as they are and to abide in a quality of loving, compassion, and gratitude, and awareness of the privilege we have of being on this path. But are we ready for this? Are we ready for this? And when your marks get set, let go. Even letting go. We don't want to let go of the pure presence.